Anyone? Can anyone hear me?
No one answered. No one moved. Kenton turned away, unable to feel sick. He could conceive only one thing, the desire for water. Ignoring the burning sands, Kenton moved in what he hoped was the direction of the camp. He passed more corpses, hundreds of them, all in white. The Kersdians would have taken their dead for a proper burial in the deep sands, leaving only his allies, or what remained of them.
They're all dead. Craven, Pastor Ellerin, my father.
Instinctively, he pushed his way into a tent, clambering for the shade.
All dead.
It was inconceivable. Too much to process. Without conscious thought, Kenton stumbled over to the far corner of the tent, pulled the lid free of the small barrel there. He dipped his hand into the cool water within.
Water.
After drinking deeply...
All dead.
Kenton fell unconscious again. Chris felt sick as she trekked across the blistering sand. Her expedition had started as 9, but she had almost immediately lost Captain Dural and his lieutenant to that dynastic border patrol. Now, 3 more, the young soldiers, had deserted because of her poor leadership. Besides herself, only 3 remained, and it appeared it was her prerogative to choose which way they were going to die.
My legs are so very tired. Can't we stop?
And then what, Professor? Look around you. There's nothing but sand.
And sun. There is a lot of sun.
Too much. My sweat is beginning to form its own society.
Good! Then at least you'd have something to study out here. I'm a linguist and I have no one to talk to. I'm going to die out here, having never said a word.
Bayon bit back a response that would have run along the lines of, we can only dream.
We have barely enough water to fill our 3 canteens, Bayon.
Everyone turned to Chris.
This isn't good.
My good man, I hardly think you need to point that out to us.
All right, you have some decisions to make, Duchess.
I do?
You are in charge of this expedition, are you not? This isn't the Elysian Senate. It's your expedition. You tell us what to do.
I know. It's just that I didn't think we had a choice.
We always have choices, Duchess. We can try to make it to a town.
Bayon stopped as they crested a rise. Before them were bodies, some just shapes in the sand. And in the distance, a line of tents, their coverings flapping in the ever-present wind.
Shella! What happened here?
Death on a professional scale.
Savages. All of them. Why would anyone?
We should check the bodies and the tents. Some of them will surely have had some water out here.
Thus, without any further discussion, Bayon tromped ahead, seniority giving way to practicality as his old mercenary's survival instincts kicked in. The others followed.
Perhaps they'll have seats in the tents.
Primitive people don't fight the same way the dynasty does, Professor.
Kenton did not know how long he slept. Voices woke him. Strange voices, speaking words that were initially strange.
With supposedly civilized restrictions. If these people were surprised by their enemies, then it would have been a slaughter.
You know a lot about war, dear man. Of course, that's what you're paid for.
They were speaking dynastic, the language of Kenton's mother, a language he had not heard anyone speak in 2 years.
Wait. Look there.
Another one? What is it? Surely he can't be.
Breathing? Yes, he is. Alert the Duchess, Professor.
Kenton opened his eyes and saw the imposing figure who was leaning down to help him sit up. The man had the darkest skin that Kenton had ever seen. Dark even for a darksider, and his frame was broad-shouldered and muscular beneath his expensive clothes.
Come on, lad. Up you get. Here, drink.
Despite his brutish appearance, the stranger gently helped Kenton drink from his water bottle.
We've traveled a long way, but we're... Let's call it lost. Do you understand me? My words? No? I see you've had a shock. What happened out there? It looks like a massacre. A massacre. Do you understand me, Daysider?
Kenton handed back the water bottle, saying nothing. What was a Darksider doing here, out in the Curla Sands, a world away from Darkside or from civilization? The question rattled in his head, the connections being made slowly in the muzziness he felt therein. As he turned the thought over in his mind, the drapes to the tent parted, and a woman entered, accompanied by two men.
In here, Duchess.
Like the men who had assisted Kenton, the three newcomers were also Darksiders, their dark skins and smoked glasses marking them out immediately. The two men were older, their smart clothes at odds with the harsh environment of the Curla, their bearing as of royal courtiers rather than the soldier-like manner of the first. And the woman, well, she was something else again.
Oh, what now? I should never have come to Dayside, Cinder. I'm not a leader of men.
The Darksider woman's clothes were extravagant, her bearing imperious, and it took Kenton a few moments to process the conversation in the foreign tongue. The older one had called her Duchess.
He's alive. The only one we've found so far.
Look at him. Probably scared, waking up after such a slaughter to find strange, dark-skinned people hovering over him speaking a strange language.
One of the men, tall and reedy with thinning hair, gently checked Kenton's pulse.
Either that, or he thinks he died and his god has a very odd sense of humor, Duchess. His pulse is steady, so there is that.
Then as a local, perhaps he can lead us to more water. If we can somehow explain our dilemma to him.
Well, you're the linguist, Professor.
But an anthropologist like you should understand these primitive people better than I, Professor.
Hold it, both of you. I suspect it won't be so hard, professors. Isn't that right, Daysider?
Kenton looked blank for a moment, but he knew that the muscular man had guessed he understood them, even though he shouldn't, not on this side of the planet.
Well, how do you people survive out here without water?
You don't waste any time, do you?
No.
He speaks!
The water.
How can you be out of water? You aren't in the desert yet.
Sun? Sand? Conclusion? Desert?
No, I mean a desert, a place with no water.
Oh, wait a minute. How do you speak dynastic so well?
One topic at a time, Duchess. Daysider, I don't understand you. If this isn't a desert, where's the water?
Well, all around us, of course. You mean... No. Of course, no one told you. It's just, on Dayside, it's common knowledge.
You were faking!
Duchess, please!
He pretended not to speak our language!
She turned on Kenton.
You pretended not to speak our language!
I did not.
You sat there listening to us all the time, understanding what we were saying. Why didn't you say something?
You never gave me an opportunity to speak. You have some water left. I assume...
Call me Beon. And we have only a little water, I'm afraid, Daysider. Why?
Give it to me.
The dark-skinned warrior reached down to his belt and pulled out a round container with a cap.
Thank you.
Kenton rose from his cot.
Easy, Daysider. I suspect you've had quite a trial.
A moment later, the wave passed, but Kenton could still feel the weakness in his limbs. He was far from healed.
Do we need to go far?
No. Just outside. I can walk.
Kenton walked slowly, with his muscles aching, across the tent.
It's just... On Dayside, it's common knowledge.
So you've said.
After you, Professor Sid.
Oh no, after you, Professor Akron. I insist.
Kenton felt the sun warming his body. Kenton and Bayon strode out across the sands, while the Duchess and the two academics trailed suspiciously after.
What is he doing, Cinder?
Leading us a merry dance, I should fancy.
Do we need to go far?
No. The water is all around us, if you know where to look.
Kenton's strength gave out as he walked out onto the sand, but he waved Bayon back as he sank to his knees.
Let me help.
No, I'm... I'll be fine. Should be enough.
No! What does he think he's doing?
Let us indulge him for a moment, Duchess.
But that's almost all our water.
The Duchess does have a point, Bayonne.
The man's clearly in shock. And probably delusional.
Respectfully, Duchess, we've lost our guide and three of our men already this day, as well as most of our supplies. Whether we like it or not, this local may be our only hope of survival.
Kenton continued to pour, letting the water drain slowly so it soaked down rather than splashing outwards.
Come on. Be here.
This is clearly a fool's errand. The man's irrational with the sun.
Maybe, Professor, but...
The ground began to tremble slightly. Kenton thrust his hands into the ground, digging through the sand and grabbing the form he felt beneath. With a heave of his weakened arms, he pulled a thick vine from the sand. It was wider than a man's arm, a dull brown in color.
What is he doing? What does he think he'll find?
He could only lift it about a foot out of the sand. Both of its ends continued on beneath the surface. What he had pulled free was part of a much, much larger network.
What is that?
Kenton continued to clutch the uncovered vine.
Friend, hand me your knife.
Bayonne pulled his knife from its sheath, a thick combat blade with a keen edge.
Here. Careful, it's sharp.
Kenton took the knife and began to cut into the vine. In a few moments, miraculous as it seemed, droplets of water began to appear like beads of sweat amid the capillaries.
That's...
water? It's amazing.
Get something to store this in.
Yes, yes.
As Bayonne hurried back to the tent, Kenton pulled the two parts of the vine apart, and water began to seep from the hundreds of tiny tubes that ran inside its center.
Shallow.
How did he know where to look?
And when can he show me? Us, that is. I mean...
Don't apologize, Duchess. Your inquisitiveness reflects well on your instructors. If you've learned nothing else, that would still be enough.
Kenton refilled Bayon's water container as Chrysala padded over to see more closely.
But how can this be? Why would they carry water like that, Daysider?
The plants carry the water for protection. Most sand creatures have hard shells that dissolve when they touch water. If sand creatures try to eat the Dorim vines, their mouths melt.
But where does the water come from?
It must be the water table, my lady. There must be a place somewhere beneath the sand where the water collects.
Bayonne returned from a tent with several empty water barrels from inside.
Here, will these do?
Yes, good.
Kenton began to fill the first, using the vine almost like a hose.
You'll need more?
No, three will do.
It took Kenton a few moments to fill all three barrels.
Done.
Incredible. If I hadn't seen it with my own eyes, I would doubt it had happened.
Once he was done, Kenton pushed the two halves of the vine together, pressing firmly to help them reseal. A second later, it was done. And as he let the vine drop to the sand, its cilia quickly wriggled it beneath the surface.
Our guide wasn't mad, at least. He could have found water at any time. He must have had quite a chuckle when we insisted on bringing water from the port city.
There's something they don't teach you in your university, Duchess. The unlearned aren't as stupid as you think.
I just want a drink. My mouth's been dry ever since we lost our man.
As the Darksiders distributed the water containers and took drinks, Kenton walked away.
These people are a long way from home. But then, so am I.
They were at the edge of the battlefield, where the corpses of dozens of sand mastrels lay. Blood dried on their bodies, sand already piling up around and over them to claim them. Some sand masters had dried out and were now more like sand sculptures.
Farewell, my friends. My father... Let us hope the Curtians aren't right. Otherwise, the afterlife will be very difficult for you.
What is he doing?
Grieving, I imagine. These are his people.
Should we say something? He understands us.
Let him have his thoughts.
How could this happen? Why did it? The Curtians have denounced sand mastery for centuries, but what has suddenly made them act on their hatred? Did we become too haughty, maybe? or too insular? When was the last time a Sandmaster helped build anything for people outside the Diem? Is that why they attacked us after so many years of peace? Had our closed ranks become intolerable? There's more to this. They found an accomplice, someone within the Diem to help them. They had to have someone to poison the Masters, to leave us defenseless. The most arrogant among us, Dryle.
And around him, the dried-out bodies, some no more than husks, seemed to cry out for vengeance.
Dezada! We must be leaving, but perhaps you would join us since we are short a guide in these treacherous lands.
Are you sure he can be trusted?
No, but...
I'll watch him, Professor. And the Duchess is correct. We do need a guide.
The group of five are crossing the Kurla Sands on the backs of riding mounts called Tonks, beetle-like creatures with armored shell bodies, four legs. Thus, Kenton remained with the Darksiders, offering to guide them as they trekked across the undulating sands of the Kurla. Sticking together seemed a good proposition under the circumstances. They were lost, and he was alone. And not just alone. There were enemies out there, he knew now. The Kurstians had become bold and dangerous, more so than in many generations. They straddled atop the Tonks that the Darksiders had brought with them and left at the edge of the battlefield, laden down with their possessions. The Tonks were great beetle-like riding beasts that swayed as they walked, moving in an unhurried rhythmic way. The Darksiders looked uncomfortable in the relentless sun, and the woman called Chris wore a large floppy hat to protect her from it.
So, how on the sands did you get lost out here without a guide?
In a word, betrayal. Some of our men became concerned we were here on a fool's errand, and so they left us, though not without some fierce discussion. Our guide died during said discussion.
Some discussion? But you're a long way from home. What brought you to Dayside?
Learning. Ours is a scientific expedition.
Then let me teach you some things. Here on Dayside, the sun is king. Kerin philosophy, the religion of Kurtzians, calls the sun the manifestation of the Sandlord, the source of man's autonomy and independence.
And you?
Even Daysiders who don't worship the sun feel some spiritual bond with it.
That is to be expected. The sun plays such a crucial role here. I am an anthropologist, you see. Professor John Akron. And this is Professor Cinder, by the by.
By the by?
Pleased to meet you, professors. I'm Kenton.
Bayonne, as you already know. Though you were a little distracted when we were introduced. And this here is the Duchess Kersala.
Honored.
We need provisions. Food for ourselves and the riding tonks. How well do you know this area, Kenton? How far is it to the nearest town?
2 days' journey. This way.
How can you be sure? Respectfully, everything looks the same out here.
Magic.
You mean...
When the sun hangs in the exact same spot for your entire life, you become sensitive to its changes. On Dayside, you never need a map to guide you home. Only the sun.
But you said magic at first. Do you believe in magic, Kimber?
Sure. Not that I've seen it, you appreciate. But the Kurtzians talk about many things happening during worship services.
What about the sand mages?
The who?
It had been a while since Kenton had spoken dynastic. He was unfamiliar with the word.
The sand mages. They rule Lossand.
You've been woefully misinformed, Duchess Kersala. Lossand is ruled by the professional heads, not your mages. I've never even heard of them.
Then...
Kersala? Duchess?
It's nothing. Just lead us to provisions, Kenton.
It took 2 days to journey to the settlement, a trading center characterized by colorful tents that shone brightly against the pale sand. Kenton had changed clothes, choosing not to advertise that he was a sandmaster while traveling among Kurstians, switching to a dun-colored robe. Kenton placed the bag full of metal onto the merchant's trading table. The low table, cloth stretched across a flat construction of sandling carapace, sat in the center of a gaudy tent with embroidered walls and numerous cushions. The Kirstian, a man with a broad face but thin limbs, opened the bag, picking at its contents with spindly fingers.
That purse seems light, friend.
The trader wore a golden coin pressed against his forehead, tied there with two gold strings like a headband. Sitting beside Kenton, Chris frowned at the trader's words. She had removed her dark glasses and watched keenly as the trader examined the small items of jewelry and scientific apparatus inside the bag. Items that had been procured from Chris's own belongings under Kenton's advice. The man's eyes lit as he saw some of the exotic jewelry.
But for this? Ha! Best deal on sand. You want Kurtzian coin? You want Losandan coin?
Either coinage is fine. I'm just going to spend it on supplies.
Spend them here, yes, friend? Well, I give you sand's good deal. My cousin, he sells supplies, food, gedoin.
Chris looked at Kenton.
What's he saying? I can't follow a word.
Not now, Chrysala.
I deserve to know what's going on. Those instruments are mine, after all.
I'll write you a transcript later.
I don't trust you, Daysider. For all I know, you're arranging to sell me into slavery instead of just selling my jewelry.
I'd be lucky to get a three-legged tonk out of that deal, Chrysala. Now hush.
Your companion is quite beautiful. However, I have found that Lancia women are rarely worth the trouble of their arrogance.
Wise words, friend. Now, for the trade?
The trader held a metal necklace up for study, using a lensed eyepiece.
How much?
Oh, friend, maybe 40 lakh? Not much useful in scraps like this. Must be melted down, yes?
Put the bag back on the table. I may not be a merchant, but I know metal and stone are valuable out here. You're sitting atop sand that's 100 feet above ground. There's no way that you're obtaining metal easily or cheaply.
Perhaps, but you're lucky I'm trading with you. Your kind.
My kind?
You think changing your robes would confuse me? I'll trade with you, Mastral.
You're mistaken.
No, I think not. But still, we'll trade. Others in town may not be so open-minded, yes?
Sift that sand, friend. What do you mean? You've never refused to trade with my people before?
Times change. It is not a good time now to be friends with Rykentia. You understand?
Rykentia. An old word for those who mastered sand, and not entirely a polite one at that.
I'll take 40. But I want something else as well. Information. What's changed? You heard what happened in the Kurla. Why did Kurtzian warriors suddenly decide they could attack a group of sandmasters?
Choose your words carefully, Ija. Ears are everywhere. Now come, quick.
The trader rose and, with stealth, despite his bulk, drew Kenton to the tent's flaps before parting them quietly.
You see them?
Kenton peered outside. Standing across the sand street were a couple of men, obviously warriors. They had Zingaleen on their arms, and swords were strapped to their sides. They wore shiny, well-made carapace armor.
Soldiers? From the warrior Daikin?
Soldiers, yes. Warrior Daikin, well...
Kenton squinted, focusing on the men's foreheads. Every Kirstian man wore a symbol to mark his Daikin, his profession, though a Daikin was more than just a job. Daikinen were more like clans, family groups that one could choose. The merchant symbol was a circle, and most of the merchant Daikin tied their marks to their foreheads. The warrior symbol was an X tattooed on the forehead. As Kenton looked, Chris moved closer to him.
What's going on?
Not now, Duchess.
As one of the men turned, Kenton saw what the merchant was referring to. There was an X on the warrior's head, but it wasn't tattooed on. It was a scar.
But scarring is the way of the...
Priest Daiki. Ah, yes. The new Akkar, the high priest, he created it.
This can't be good.
Kenton was thinking back as he spoke, recalling the ambush on the Kurla and the way that their attackers had sported that same X scar, every last one of them.
We of the merchants are worried. The Akkar has much popularity. He says he destroyed the Rykentian. that the Sandlord is very pleased with him, and the time of choosing comes very soon.
Impossible. The merchant Daikin hasn't lost a choosing in centuries. The High Merchant is king in Kaer Kadasha.
The Ekkar was wrong in one thing. The Rykentia, you, are still alive. A few, at least.
There are other survivors? You've seen them?
They passed through here a week ago. A dozen men.
Then I'm not alone after all.
Not all of us want the Ekkar to be king, yes? So, I trade. You buy food, you go back to Losand. The Sandlord may take my soul, but I would not see the Ekkar's words be true.
Kenton nodded. It was a lot to take in.
Now, however, might I request you depart? I would rather not be seen in your company. Nothing personal, you understand?
I understand. And thank you, Traidka. It's not an easy choice you made.
There's a risk in all trade, and where there's risk, there's profit. Here, 40 lakh. You see my cousin at the third tent? Tell him we made a deal. He will honor it.
Thank you.
Together, Kenton and Chris left the trader's tent, while the man stood watching the street uncomfortably. Bayon joined them from the shadows, where he had been waiting for the Duchess.
That man seemed agitated. What was that about?
Local politics.
Politics? That's what you were talking about?
Yes, curtsy and politics.
What does that have to do with us getting food?
Absolutely nothing.
Then why bother with it?
Bayon fell into step behind them, leaving the shade in front of the merchant's doorway, where he had been guarding. He wore a slight smile that seemed to say, "She saved you, Daysider. Now you have to put up with her."
It's complicated. 200 years ago, the Curtsians and the Losandin stopped fighting for the first time in history.
Why were you fighting? Did they want your land?
Hardly. The Curtsians call Losand the Rykel, the cursed land. It's the desert, remember? No water vines.
Then why fight?
Because we're infidels, non-believers. 2, 3... This stall, wasn't it?
They had stopped close to a trader dressed in similar clothes to the man they had left. He was already busy loading the last of their saddlebags. Kenton watched two Kirstian soldiers pass close by on their patrol before he spoke again.
The historical Kirstian viewpoint was that we had to be slain for our own good, so we didn't reproduce and raise up more infidels. But 200 years ago, the Ekkar, the High Priest, lost the kingship for the first time in recorded history, and the High Merchant was crowned instead.
How does one lose a kingship?
The nobility, the Klin, voted against him. The Kli title passes from father to son, and over time it became more populated by merchants than holy men chosen by the Ekkar. According to the merchant, change is on the wind. The 50 years between choosings is up this year. The symbol that the soldiers wear is the Akar's symbol.
The cross? I've seen it before, Kenton.
Wait, you've what?
When we first met Port on Dayside 2 weeks ago, we stumbled into a rally, I suppose you would call it. The man hosting it spoke in a tongue Cinder and I just barely recognized. So quickly were the words spoken. And not just quickly, there was anger there. Real anger.
What did he say?
Professor Cinder recognized it as Karshant, the holy language of the clergy. He told us that the man said, "May the Sand Lord bless us."
I wonder what he wanted blessed.
An endeavor of some sort, perhaps? It certainly struck a chord with the crowd.
In my experience, crowds are like the tonks you ride, Chris. They're easily led.
Wait, what did you just call me?
Chris. Chrysala is too long, especially if I'm going to use it to annoy you.
Well, you shouldn't. That's what Gevon used to call me.
Who's...
Kenton paused as he felt an almost unnoticeable tug at his money pouch. A pickpocket. Fortunately, he didn't have any money. Unfortunately, he had chosen to store something infinitely more precious in his money pouch. He reached for the thief's hand.
Hey! Thief!
The pickpocket was a small Kirstian boy of perhaps 12. Kenton was too slow. The boy had already started to pull back when Kenton reached for him. And as the boy moved away, his hand tugged something bright from Kenton's pouch. The end of his golden mastril's sash.
Aish.
The boy dropped the sash as if it were a deadly sandling.
Rykentia! Rykentia!
The marketplace froze around them, hundreds of eyes turning to focus on the sash, which Kenton furiously tried to stuff back into its pouch. In that instant, the time of a single heartbeat, Kenton knew that everything had changed. As he worked to hide the sash, his eyes fell on a pair of faces that stood out from the crowd, faces with cold eyes and scarred X's on their foreheads.
Kenton, are you all right?
We'd better go.
What's wrong? What is it?
Just go, Chris, right now.
They entered what Kenton called the desert, just after leaving the town a few hours before, but the landscape seemed the same to Chris.
This is the desert?
This is the desert.
There was nothing around them to be seen but the same white dunes, some barely a few feet in height, others taller than a man astride a horse. Chris rode beside Kenton, who led the way, while the two professors followed, and Bayon brought up the rear, ever alert to danger.
How do you know? Everything looks the same out here, Kenton. How far is it to Lossend?
We're already in Lossend. It starts where the desert does, though the sand won't recede until tomorrow. My turn. Who is Gavin? You mentioned the name earlier.
He was my betrothed. Gavaldin, Prince of Ellis, the second son. But an important match, nonetheless. I came to Dayside because he... because of him.
To get away from him, then?
No.
Then why? Looking for a place to settle away from your primary wardrobe?
If you must know, Gavon is dead.
I'm sorry. So your expedition isn't just one of scientific exploration. You're here for revenge.
Not revenge. A dream. A foolish man's dream.
What does Dayside have that's so intriguing?
Sand mages.
Oh. Your mythical rulers of Lossen. Of course.
They're legends on Darkside. Powerful beings who control the elements with their magics. They're just children's stories. Only Gavin believed them. And I suppose I wanted to, for him. But until you said...
I'm sorry. What did your story say?
That the Sand Mages did preposterous things. Flying through the air, calling up sandstorms, granting wishes to lost travelers. They were impervious to weapons and made objects float with their minds. They're just silly stories about Dayside, Kenton. To us, this place is a great unknown.
Yes. Stories.
Daysider, I have a question. Ever since we left that town, you've been looking over your shoulder, but now you've stopped. Why? Do you think we might be followed?
Kenton wanted to explain that it was because of the sash the pickpocket had revealed, how it marked him as a sandmastrel. But until he could figure out what the Duchess Chrysala wanted with the sandmasters, well, as his old friend Eric would frequently remind him, it wasn't smart to show your sand too early.
It doesn't matter now. I was wrong, Bayon. They aren't...
A massive, man-shaped form exploded from the side of the dune next to Bayon, covered in sand. The warrior leapt for Bayon, tearing the Darksider off his tonk.
My word, it's a robbery!
Keep your head down, you fool!
Bayon's assailant, a bare-chested Kirstian, fell with him. The tonks shuffled nervously, kicking up sand as the two men rolled on the ground. The Kirstian clutched Bayon's robes with one hand and raised a carapace hatchet in the other.
Tensa! Collaborator!
I don't understand a word you're saying!
The sand exploded all around them, spewing forth a half dozen further warriors.
Kenton! Who are they?
Kirstians!
Wait! I don't understand! Where are you?
Kenton jumped off his tonk.
Aisha!
The move was well placed. For a moment later, he heard the distinctive air rushings of Zinkalin being fired. Three small arrows hissed through the air above him, and a fourth snapped off his tonked carapace.
Well, that erases any doubts about negotiating. I can guess who it is they're after. Me, the Sandmaster with the shiny gold sash.
Kenton pressed against the side of his mount, keeping it between himself and the majority of the Kirstians. Only one was on his side. Unfortunately, one was more than enough.
Die, Rikensha!
The warrior, clothed in black carapace armor, was already aiming his Zinkal to fire again. Years of training with the tower's warriors caused Kenton to drop instinctively, rolling to the ground, dodging a virtually point-blank shot. Kenton rolled to his feet only a short distance from his opponent, but now he clutched a handful of sand.
You want to fight a Mastral? Fine!
Here! Sandlord, protect me!
Kenton thrust the sand forward. Nothing happened.
What? I should... No! The powers are gone.
Kenton threw the ineffectual sand at his opponent. The Kersdian, still expecting the sand to kill him, threw up his arms.
Sandlord, protect your loyal servant!
When the unmastered grains sprayed across his armor, the man barely had a chance to lower his arms in confusion before... Kenton's punch took him in the face. The Kersdian stumbled backwards, clutching at his broken nose.
Old-fashioned, I know, but effective nonetheless.
Kenton followed the stumbling warrior. Even stripped of his sand powers, he was not defenseless. He reached down to slide the man's carapace sword free from the sheath at his side.
I'll take this.
Sudden pain sliced through Kenton's arm, and he felt an arrow tear at his robes. It only nicked his skin, but it was enough to remind him that this was not a one-on-one battle. Kenton thrust the carapace sword at his opponent's face. The warrior, who had recovered from the punch, easily blocked the blow with his armored forearm. Kenton's attack had another purpose, however. He spun around the warrior, putting the man's body between himself and the rest of the battle. The archer who had wounded him still had one arrow left, and as Kenton turned, he was able to pick the man out. He had rounded Kenton's tonk and knelt on the sand, his face calm as he aimed his gauntleted forearm for another shot. A shot that was now blocked, however, by his comrade.
Wait! Don't shoot! Don't shoot!
Kenton reached out for his human shield, intending to grapple with the man and hold him close in an attempt to keep the others from firing their Zinkalin.
Come here, you!
Unfortunately, the Kersdian realized what was happening, and instead of spinning to face Kenton, he simply started running in the opposite direction, leaving Kenton standing stupidly on the sand with no cover. Two other warriors moved around the tonk and prepared to take shots at him.
Target's clear!
Kill him!
Kenton looked around wildly, realizing he was trapped. His back was to a dune, and he had opponents on all sides. He barely had time to reach down for a handful of sand and hold it out threateningly.
Come to life!
But still nothing happened.
Kenton, look out!
Kenton waded into battle, swinging the stolen sword. Years of training with the tower's warriors had made his responses second nature.
No, you don't get me without a fight. So, let's finish this quickly!
Behind him, the Tonks had buried themselves in the sand, an instinctive response to danger. Chris, Cinder, and Akron were caught up in the enforced burial, their legs trapped in the sand as the Tonks burrowed headfirst into the dunes.
Oh, Shella, what now? Oh, Shella, oh, Shella!
Unable to move, Cinder was struck by an arrow from a warrior's Zinkal. Kenton could not help feeling bitterness. The Duchess and her people thought they were savages on this side of the world. Seeing only this sorry display, Kenton would have accepted their viewpoint. But he knew that the Kersdian warriors were after him. They had always feared the Sandmasters, but they had never been so bold up until now. It was as the merchant had said at the trading spot. The Akar, or High Priest, must have got them riled up to make them attack so boldly like this. Again, Kenton grabbed a handful of sand. As he whirled to avoid a Zinkal bolt. The lifeless sand tumbled to the ground as it fell from Kenton's hand, but it suddenly did not matter. Before him, the warrior's head exploded.
Did I do that? I can't have. My sand wouldn't charge.
Stay side up!
Then he saw Bayon. The black-skinned warrior stood tall, some sort of steel tube held in his hand. Smoke rose in the air before him. The Kersdian that had attacked Bayon lay face down in the sand, his neck twisted at a gruesome angle. Calmly, the Darksider turned his weapon on another one of the archers. Carapace armor shattered like glass, and the warrior was thrown backward several feet. When the man fell to the ground, Kenton could see a hole in his back, a hand span wide. The hard-faced Darksider turned his weapon on a third man. The Kersdian stared at his opponent for a moment, his eyes wide with horror.
No! No!
Before breaking into a terrified run, the other three joined him, running for the cover of the nearest dune.
Run! Run! The Rakinsha's allies have their own magic!
They're leaving.
Then they are wise. Are you all right, Daysider?
I can't command the sand anymore.
Kenton!
Shook up, but I'll be fine. But I can't command the sand anymore. I can't.
We don't have much time.
Bayon kneeled down before the warrior who had first attacked. The man's neck was broken. He wore minimal clothing, and his forehead showed another of those X-scars.
Recognize him?
I've never seen anything like him before. Kurtians never fight unarmored.
Yet this man attacks wearing little more than a loincloth.
He's also shaved his head. I've never seen a Kurtian do that.
What about the scar? It's certainly intentional. Ritualistic, perhaps.
The square is the symbol for priests, but the X inside is the marking of a warrior. I've never seen both together before, Bayon.
A warrior priest, perhaps? He ruined the ambush by jumping out too soon. That saved our lives. Tell me, why did they want to kill you, Daysider?
For something I used to be. We should go, Bayon.
We should. You believe they'll be back?
Yes. Kurtians never abandon the bodies of their fallen. They believe a man must be buried in deep sand lest his soul be lost to wander the Curler.
Bayon nodded, replacing his strange weapon in a sheath at his side. Kenton regarded it for a moment, remembering its incredible power. He had seen the unfamiliar items at Bayon's sides, but had assumed them to be instruments of some sort. Who could have imagined a weapon so small yet so destructive? Kenton shook his head, moving over to begin raising the tonks.
Ask later. Right now, we need to move.
My first battle! I say, Kenton, does this sort of thing happen often?
Akron, for once, please shut up!
The older professor was clutching his left arm, the end of a Zinkal arrow sticking from between his bloodied fingers.
Let me help you.
It's nothing.
Stay still so I can remove it.
With a simple tug, Kenton pulled the arrow out of Cinder's arm. It slid out easily, for it no longer had a head.
What? Where's the tip?
The arrowhead wasn't treated. The carapace dissolved. Grit your teeth. This is going to hurt.
As he spoke, Kenton reached for his guidon.
Just a little to finish the job.
What are you doing to him?
Carapace can cause a wound to fester. The water dissolves it, but we don't want to infect. Do we, Professor?
No. Thank you.
May I have your scarf?
Yes, of course. Too wretched hot to wear anyway.
Kenton began to bind the wound.
Interesting. Local customs often originate in practicality and survival.
Once Kenton had finished binding Cinder's wound, he tapped the tonk's horn with the tip of his sword sheath. The creature immediately began to unbury itself, shaking and wiggling as it climbed out of the sand.
Interesting process. I think I can do the others.
Kenton paused beside Chris's tonk. The girl had obviously been disquieted by the battle. Her eyes were closed, and she was rocking back and forth. Kenton waited hesitantly for a moment, then reached out to shake her on the shoulder.
Chrysala, are you okay? Do you need help?
Fighting like that is a little outside my realm of experience, Kenton. But I'm all right. Just stuck fast.
Let me...
Whoop! But why? Why would these beasts develop such odd behavior? Surely hiding beneath the sand doesn't protect them from predators.
Riding tonks have very weak minds. This isn't to protect them from predators. This is what they do in a sandstorm. Whenever they get confused, they assume they're in a sandstorm and bury themselves beneath the ground.
Oh, I see. Well, thank you.
No, thank you. Your man, Bayon, saved my life.
It was more self-preservation, Daysider. Now, is our linguist all right to keep moving?
He should be. Melted carapace rots easily unless it is dried properly. I think I got the wound clean enough.
Bayon watched Kenton for a moment, other questions running through his mind. He asked nothing further, however. Instead, he walked back to one of the fallen warriors. Once there, he stooped briefly, removing the Zinkal from the priest's arm by cutting its straps, then walked back to his tonk.
The weapon is called a pistol, if you were wondering.
Kenton looked up slowly, where Chris's words intruded on his thoughts. There was a haunted expression on his face, one of sorrow. He had grown quiet after the attack, almost unresponsive. During the past few hours, he had ignored Chris's every attempt to draw him into conversation, an attitude that she found increasingly frustrating. She wanted to know why they had been attacked, who those men had been, and if they would attack again. Unfortunately, Kenton wasn't talking. So Chris had decided to try a new approach. Instead of asking questions, she tried to fuel Kenton's sense of curiosity. It would have worked for her, after all.
They're relatively new to Darkseid, less than a century old. Only a few of the nations have them. The dynasty is very proficient at keeping new technology from spreading through its provinces. Skathen, the current monarch of the dynasty, knows how dangerous a little knowledge can be.
Does it use air pressure?
No. It relies on a type of explosive called gunpowder.
This gunpowder must be powerful to cut through sandling carapace armor. How many times can it be used?
Just once. But Bayon's pistols have two barrels. They're officers' weapons. Very well crafted.
Two barrels? Then he was bluffing? He couldn't have killed that third Curtian.
Not unless he pulled out his other pistol. Now, what is going on, Kenton? Those Curtians attacked us just to get to you, didn't they? And they considered you so dangerous. They only sent one of their men against Bayon, but sent six against you. What are you hiding?
Well, certainly not the fact that you annoy me, dear Chrysala of Darkseid.
I...
When he saw her expression, Kenton cursed himself. How could he be so cruel? Had he spent so long fighting authority that he didn't know how to stop?
Sorry. It's not my best day.
I suppose not. So, do you think those warriors will attack again?
I wondered when you would get to that.
Well, we deserve an explanation of some sort.
I suppose you do. No, I don't think they'll attack again. We're too close to Losandan civilization now.
But why did they try to kill us in the first place?
Not us. Me. They have nothing against Darksiders. They are opposed to Losandan religious principles, however.
I thought you said that the wars were over.
I thought they were. Besides, just because most Curtians are willing to forgive our heathen nature doesn't mean they all have. Those men we saw, they belong to some new Curtian religious group. That's why they tried to kill me. I'm a non-believer.
Chris frowned. There was more he wasn't telling her, but she could sense the reservation within him. After traveling with him for just a few days, she knew that if she tried to press the issue, he would only grow more withdrawn. In front of them, Bayon suddenly brought his mount to a halt, his head frozen in a posture of listening. Chris grew cold, her hand suddenly gripping the unloaded pistol with tense anxiety. What had the warrior heard? Had the Kirstians finally returned? Bayon frowned, then turned his mount, hammering it forward and to the west.
Move, beast!
Bayon, wait! Where are you going?
Chris followed anxiously, but he didn't go far. The mercenary led his tank up the side of a shallow dune, cresting the top and pulling to a halt.
Oh, there. Easy now.
Oh, okay, good. Steady now.
Chris stopped beside him, and only then did she discern what he had noticed.
Water.
Before her, the sand fell away, revealing a dun, flat plain of smooth rocks marked with occasional piles of white sand. A cavern opened from the rock floor a short distance away, and bubbling from its depths was a massive river.
The Rido Ali, the vein of cursed waters, as the Curtians have dubbed it. Lifeblood of Lossen.
It's amazing.
It is. Just moments before, we had been in a stark desert, not a patch of water to be seen. But now this, a roaring river at least 50 feet wide.
We must have finally dropped beneath the water table.
But where does it come from?
That mountain, perhaps. Do you see? Water melts at the mountain's top, but gets trapped in caverns and clefts, traveling down the rock until it stops far beneath those sands.
That seems credible, Professor.
Thank you.
Credible for Dayside, anyway. The rules here seem so contrary.
They probably think the same about you.
Chris ignored him. Regardless of its geological roots, she found the river intoxicating. For weeks now, she had seen nothing but the repetitive dunes of white sand. She was happy to see anything different, even if it was relatively wan by Darkside standards. The land surrounding the river was by no means lush, but compared to the desert, it was fertile. Sickly green bushes burrowed their roots into the rocky brown soil around the river, and there were even a few squat trees, though nothing grew on the pale white patches of sand.
Lossandra lies on the Ali for nearly all of its water. Our society can't stray far from its banks. There aren't any vines, and wells are unreliable at best. Welcome to the desert.
Time passed, but the sun never wavered. The group crossed the desert on their steeds, Kenton quiet and withdrawn as he pondered his own secrets, Chris ever inquisitive.
How far do we have to go?
As far as it is.
Do you mean to be infuriating?
Duchess, leave the man be.
At that point, Bayon produced the Zinkal weapon that he had liberated from the fallen Kirstian ambusher and passed it to Chris to study.
Here, something to look at.
It's an interesting device. What is it called, Kenton?
A Zinkalin, or Zinkal.
Zinkalin.
The top of the weapon was protected by an oblong, convex piece of carapace that ran from wrist to elbow. The shell ran around a group of wooden tubes and strange black chambers. The three chambers, shaped something like a pear, each fed into a thin carapace pipe, perhaps an inch in diameter. Arrows fit snugly in the tubes, the plug just behind the arrowhead forming a seal and holding the missile in place.
It's mechanically simple. It operates along similar principles to our pistols, but uses air for its propulsion.
She released the pumping mechanism, a long rod that folded out of the underside of the weapon and began to repressurize the chambers. The pump worked easily, working at an angle like a bellows rather than up and down.
It's very efficient.
After just 5 or 6 pumps, she was able to reload one of the small arrows and fire again. Kenton took note of how the noblewoman had reached her conclusion so swiftly. She understood mechanisms, how they were put together, how their parts worked. It suggested she was more than just the clothes horse he had taken her to be when he had first seen her.
Not much power, though. This wouldn't go through armor.
Not carapace armor. But Zinkalin aren't meant to be used like bows. They're for short-range combat to wound your opponent before you engage him with your sword. The best Kurtzian warriors, however, are good enough shots to incapacitate or kill with a single arrow.
They trekked on, crossing the desert step by step.
Zinkalin. Zinkalin.
It took 2 days. They had crossed desert and seen more sand than Chris ever wanted to, all the while under the watchful eye of the relentless, unchanging sun. But at last, they had reached their final destination.
The city of Khazer, capital of Lausanne.
A wide river ran toward the city, bisecting the land before them.
We'll need to cross the river?
Yes.
The land on the banks was fertile, with crops growing, harvested by the Lausandan farmers. A few dwellings lined the banks of the river like suburbs leading to the grand city itself. Seen from a distance, the city featured close-packed streets and low buildings, and many of the more impressive structures were built of sand. The sand buildings were dilapidated, however, patched haphazardly with carapace shell and cloth, where they were slowly giving way to entropy.
Why, it's splendid.
Fascinating. Truly fascinating.
I expected. This isn't what I expected.
We'll need to catch a ferry from here to get across the water.
For Kenton, it was Khazar, a place he had lived all his life.
I'll secure you a ride. and someone to get you to Lanzer, the dark side section of the city.
It took Kenton just a few moments of negotiation with a local ferrywoman on the docks.
Good day. My associates here require passage to Lanzer.
To them? 7 lakh.
Make it 5.
Lanzer is out of my way.
Kenton opened his robes and drew out the sash that marked him as a sand mastrel. Or it had. He wondered what claim he had to it now, with his powers exhausted. However, seeing the sash did the trick, and the ferrywoman capitulated, knowing a mastrel could request any service for free.
5 lakh, you said?
They'll pay.
Kenton returned to where Chris and her group were waiting atop their mounts.
The lady will take you. 5 lakh. Pay her when you reach the destination, not before. And you'll need to leave the Tonks behind.
Why?
Because they don't like water and won't cross it.
Then how will we get around in the city?
You walk. Or I suppose you can hire a carriage if you must. Which means, I am afraid, that this will be farewell, Chrysala.
Goodbye?
I have things I need to attend to.
Oh. Goodbye, Kenton. It has been an education.
The ferrywoman's crew helped the Darksiders load their supplies, which included several large, robust cases.
Oh, careful with those! They're...
What did she say?
Forget it, Duchess. They don't understand me. Perhaps we'll find someone in the Darksider section who can speak dynastic as well as the local tongue.
And until then?
I suggest you instruct me to carry anything precious, such as your equipment.
Thank you, Bayon.
I wonder what kind of city it will be, Professor.
Cinder rubbed his arm where the arrow had pierced.
The kind where men of learning get shot at by savages, I would hazard, John.
Now remember, my esteemed friend, a true man of learning retains an open mind.
I'd sooner that than an open wound.
Elsewhere, in a narrow, shadowy alleyway, close to the Khazar docks, over 2 dozen uniformed figures were listening to the final instructions of their superior, a senior tract called Ace.
It's taken months to find Lachlan, and weeks to plan this raid. Everybody here knows that.
Yes, ma'am.
She, like all of them, wore black armor and a cloak. Their ranks were differentiated by subtle markings, their weaponry on show.
Timing is everything.
They were the thin line of defense that kept Khazar from sinking into lawlessness, and Ace, above all of them, approached that task with absolute gravity.
We won't have a more perfect opportunity than this day. Taisha's in session today, serving as an ideal distraction.
Ace did not voice her suspicion that Nilto, the so-called Lord Beggar, was giving testimony there, and that she had concluded that he was also Sherzan, the ruthless master criminal whose operation they were hoping to bring down. No, that suspicion would remain her own, for now.
If we strike swiftly, and if he's there, we can bring Lachlan into custody before 10th hour. Your men understand how important Lachlan is, yes, Jadan?
He's Sherzan's right-hand man. I've circulated his image and details. If he's here, he won't walk out.
Jadan, Tane, are your men ready?
Senior Tract Ace looked at her 2 trusted seconds. Jadan, loyal to his very core and quick-thinking. Tane, slower, more meticulous, but infinitely trustworthy. Their styles of enforcing the law were different. Different again to Ace's often instinctive way, but they knew how to get results.
I have my people on the roof ready to go, and my squad will be with you when you enter, ma'am.
Excellent. And Tane?
I'll bring my team in as the second wave once you've made entry, ma'am.
Excellent. Okay, people. Wait for my signal.
I'm telling you, it's empty. It's empty! All of the DM's riches are completely unguarded, left to be plundered. And the best part is, we know no one's going to come looking for them. They're all dead! All the Sandmasters! Besides, you know who the real thieves here are? Them! The Sandies, taking whatever they want and ignoring the rest of us. We're only balancing the scales.
I don't know. They aren't all dead.
Enough of them are, right?
Maris eyed his other 2 colleagues at the table. All 4 were experienced thieves, but rumors of the big score to be had at the abandoned DM were too much for him to ignore.
If it's so easy, why don't you just walk in there yourself, Maris?
I can't do it alone. You know the DM. All the valuables are on the second floor and no stairs to get up there. It's a 3-man job minimum. Plus, share the wealth. Right, guys?
Theirs wasn't the only such conversation happening in the room. The hall was a favored meeting place and was filled with tables, plush chairs, and cushions on the floor. The room was well lighted by the windows. Even thieves on Dayside shunned darkness, but was on the building's third floor, which offered a measure of protection against being seen. At least a half dozen conversations, just like Maris's, were happening around the room, each of them potentially discussing the same plan. That was why he needed to move quickly.
Look, I know it sounds dangerous, but are we going to let a few Sandys, dead Sandys, keep us from the hall of a lifetime? I'm telling you, we don't have long. As soon as people realize that the Mastrels really aren't coming back, the Diem is going to be crawling with job men.
What about the ones that are still alive?
Most of them aren't even powerful enough to get to the upper floors. They'll never know we're there. Besides, I have it on good authority that after today, we won't have much to worry about.
Is that so? What do you mean?
Let's just say that the Diem as a profession is about to go the way of its master.
All right. I'm in.
Me too.
Sure, Maris. You ain't never steered me wrong before, my friend.
Ah, great! Four-way split, right?
At that very instant, the room plunged into blackness.
What the...
Hey, what's happening? What's...
The darkness parted slightly after a moment. A door opened on the far side of the room, light from the hallway outside spilling in. However, Maris's horror didn't go away. Silhouetted in the doorway stood a form easily identified by its flowing cape.
Trax!
Maris reached for his sword as Zinkaline began to fire. Senior Tracked Ace strode through the room, sword in one hand, Zinkal raised to fire.
You're all under arrest.
Few of the thieves offered resistance, however. They were too confused by the sudden darkness and subsequent attack to do much but stumble around in confusion. The thick cloth window coverings, rolled down by Jadan's men on the roof, were removed just after Ace's squad entered the room, and Jadan's squad began coming down ropes just outside. However, it appeared as if such cautions were unnecessary.
All right, don't push!
Hands where we can see them.
The thieves capitulated with barely a struggle, knowing they were outnumbered.
Lockmalin isn't here, ma'am.
Ace looked around at the faces of those her men were arresting, confirming the observation of her man, Tain.
You're right. Jadan?
Good experience for the men, I guess, ma'am.
Most of Jadan's squad was made up of younger Tracts, recent additions to Ace's band.
Ugh. We all know that most of these lowlifes will get off because of lack of evidence.
I recognize several of them. Maybe something will stick.
Ugh.
Months of planning had been wasted. Ace was no closer to catching Nilto in his guise of Sherzan than she had been before. She had failed. She could almost hear the Lord Beggar laughing when he heard about Ace's mistake, her raid on a den of pickpockets and petty burglars. A sharp pain brought Ace back to the room. Her hands were clenched so tightly that her fingernails were biting into the skin of her palms, drawing blood. Ace quickly refocused, pushing back the anger and rage before it took her over. Her breathing slowed, and her muscles relaxed. Had this lapse been noticed?
Looks like we're done here, ma'am. 14 arrests. Not bad.
Yes. Good.
Let's get these gentlemen over to the hall for processing.
Ace frowned, watching her second cross the room.
Something's wrong.
She followed Jadan, stepping off the distance from one wall to the other. The room was too small. It didn't match the careful plans Ace had drawn for the building. That meant... Several small sections of the far wall opened, revealing the ends of Zinkalin.
Get down! It's a trap!
Everybody form...
The arrow took a surprised Jadan in the neck, dropping him and curtailing his scream. Other Tracts were falling, arrows sticking from their chests or limbs. Ace dashed forward, heedless of the archers, running toward the wall.
Death won't stop me today!
A dozen arrows snapped past her, the archers finding it difficult to aim for single targets in such an enclosed space. One arrow passed within inches of Ace's leg, tearing a hole in her cape as it sped by. The Tracts offered a pathetic resistance, many of them wounded or